In a world increasingly polarized between the people and the elite, Kaz Mutta's exploration of populism couldn't be more timely. When Bernie Sanders rails against the billionaire class and Donald Trump vows to drain the swamp, they're tapping into the same powerful political current despite their vastly different ideologies. Populism has become the defining political phenomenon of our time, with figures from Venezuela's Hugo Chavez to Hungary's Viktor Orban riding its way to power. Yet for all its ubiquity, populism remains widely misunderstood. Mutta's book has become required reading in political science departments worldwide and has been cited by former President Barack Obama as essential for understanding today's political landscape. As polarization intensifies globally, this concise guide to populism's core ideas, historical development, and relationship with democracy offers crucial insights for anyone seeking to navigate our turbulent political waters. Populism ranks among the most contested concepts in political science. Applied to figures as diverse as Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump in America, Marine Le Pen in France, and Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil, the term often seems to lose meaning through overuse. What exactly makes someone populist? At its core, populism is a specific way of viewing politics and society. What Mutta calls a thin-centered ideology that divides the world into two homogeneous antagonistic groups, the pure people versus the corrupt elite. Populists believe politics should express the general will of the people rather than elite interests. Unlike thick-centered ideologies like socialism or liberalism that offer comprehensive worldviews, populism has a limited core that attaches itself to other ideologies. This explains why populism takes such different forms across contexts, appearing in socialist form in Latin America, nationalist form in Europe, and libertarian form in the United States. Populism stands opposed to two other political perspectives. Elitism shares populism's dualistic worldview but reverses the moral judgment, viewing elites as superior to the dangerous masses. Pluralism rejects the binary division altogether, seeing society as composed of multiple overlapping groups with legitimate differences. What makes populism particularly powerful is its moral framing. The division between people and elite isn't primarily about wealth, power, or education, but about purity versus corruption. The elite aren't just privileged, they're portrayed as fundamentally immoral, working against the interests of ordinary citizens. This moral dimension explains why populist rhetoric often reaches religious intensity, portraying politics as an existential battle between good and evil, rather than a negotiation between competing interests. This moral framework helps explain why compromise becomes so difficult when populism enters political systems. How do you compromise with evil? When politics becomes a moral crusade rather than a practical exercise in problem solving, the ground for democratic negotiation shrinks dramatically. Populism's ideological structure rests on three core concepts: the people, the elite, and the general will. Understanding how populists construct these concepts reveals the movement's internal logic and appeal. The people, in populist discourse, functions as what scholars call an empty signifier, deliberately vague to maximize its appeal. It typically combines three meanings: the people as sovereign, the legitimate source of political power, the common people, ordinary citizens of modest means, and the people as nation, a unified cultural community. This construction serves both to unite diverse constituencies and to exclude those deemed outside the authentic community. When Donald Trump declared in his inaugural address, January 20, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again, he was invoking all three meanings simultaneously, positioning himself as the champion of popular sovereignty, ordinary Americans, and national identity against cosmopolitan elites. The elite, in populist discourse, represents a homogeneous, corrupt group opposing the general will of the people. Though primarily a moral distinction, elites are identified by their positions in politics, media, academia, and business. Left-wing populists typically emphasize economic exploitation by corporate elites, while right-wing populists focus on cultural betrayal by intellectual and political elites. When Hugo Chavez railed against oligarchs in Venezuela, or when Viktor Orban attacks Brussels bureaucrats in Hungary, they're constructing specific versions of the elite tailored to their political contexts. Populists in power often shift their definition of elites, blaming economic sabotage or foreign interference when their policies fail to deliver promised results. The third pillar, the general will, draws from Jean-Jacques Rousseau's political philosophy. Populists believe in a pure, uncorrupted will of the people that politicians should identify and implement. This leads them to favor direct democratic mechanisms like referenda over representative institutions they view as corrupted by elite interests. This concept of general will explains populists' complicated relationship with democratic institutions. While they champion popular sovereignty, they often show impatience with constitutional constraints designed to protect minority rights or deliberative processes that slow decision-making. The general will isn't something constructed through debate, but something that already exists, waiting to be discovered and implemented. Populism's remarkable adaptability across different political and cultural contexts demonstrates its power as a political framework. From the United States to Latin America to Europe and beyond, populist movements share core features while taking dramatically different forms based on local conditions. In North America, populism has deep historical roots dating to the 1890s People's Party that mobilized farmers against railroad monopolies and Eastern bankers. American populism has oscillated between progressive and reactionary forms, from the economic populism of the New Deal to the cultural populism of George Wallace. Recent manifestations include both the left-leaning Occupy Wall Street movement, with its slogan of "We are the 99%, and the right-leaning Tea Party movement that paved the way for Donald Trump's rise. Latin America represents populism's most enduring regional tradition, explained by the region's extreme inequality combined with relatively long democratic traditions. The region has experienced three distinct waves of populism: classical populism from the 1930s-1960s, exemplified by Argentina's Juan Perón; neoliberal populism in the 1990s, Peru's Alberto Fujimori; and radical left populism since the late 1990s, Venezuela's Hugo Chavez. Each wave defined the people and the elite differently, reflecting changing economic and political conditions. European populism remained relatively marginal throughout most of the 20th century, but surged in the 1990s with the rise of populist radical right parties like France's National Front. These parties combined populism with nativism and authoritarianism, positioning themselves as defenders of ordinary citizens against both immigrants and cosmopolitan elites. Following the 2008 financial crisis, left-wing populist parties like Greece's Syriza and Spain's Podemos emerged to challenge austerity policies imposed by European institutions. Beyond these regions, populism has spread globally. In Southeast Asia, populist leaders like Thailand's Thaksin Shinawatra emerged following the 1997 Asian financial crisis. In the Middle East, populist rhetoric featured prominently in the Arab Spring movements. Even established democracies like Australia and New Zealand have seen populist parties gain significant support. What explains these diverse manifestations? Populism always emerges in response to specific grievances that vary by context. Its thin ideological core means it always appears attached to host ideologies that address these grievances, typically socialism on the left and nationalism on the right. Regional phenomena like European integration or Latin American inequality create similar conditions that produce waves of comparable populist movements across national borders. Populism manifests through different organizational forms, which helps explain why some populist movements achieve greater electoral success and longevity than others. While populism is often associated with charismatic leaders, populist mobilization isn't always leader-centered. Three distinct types of populist mobilization exist: personalist leadership, social movement, and political party. The political system shapes which form emerges, while the mobilization type strongly affects a movement's durability and impact. Personalist leadership represents the quintessential form of populist mobilization, an individual campaigning largely independent of existing party structures, gathering support through personal appeal. Examples include Peru's Alberto Fujimori, Venezuela's Hugo Chavez, and Italy's Silvio Berlusconi. These leaders build direct connections with supporters with minimal organizational mediation, claiming they personally embody the people's will. When Fujimori rose to power in late 1980s Peru amid economic crisis and insurgency, he presented himself as a pure outsider with a slogan, "A president like you." His organizations remained extremely weak and completely under his control, filled with political novices hand-picked for loyalty. This personalist approach helped him win power, but created vulnerability. When he fled the country amid scandal, his political legacy collapsed immediately. Social movements represent a bottom-up form of populist mobilization, featuring continuous political engagement through informal networks rather than formal organizations. The Tea Party in the United States exemplifies this approach. Emerging after Rick Santelli's 2009 on-air rant against Obama's bailout policies, it combined grassroots activists with professional conservative organizations but resisted centralized leadership. Political parties represent the most institutionalized form of populist mobilization. Despite populism's anti-establishment rhetoric, many successful populist actors organize as parties to aggregate interests, elaborate policy programs, and train personnel. France's National Front demonstrates this approach. Beginning as a coalition of far-right groups under Jean-Marie Le Pen, it developed into a nationwide organization with 83,000 members under his daughter Marine's leadership. Populist mobilization typically evolves through different stages rather than remaining fixed. Many successful European populist parties began as non-populist organizations transformed by new leadership. More commonly, populist mobilization begins with a personalist leader creating an electoral vehicle, which either fails quickly or evolves into a more structured party to consolidate power. The political system strongly influences which form emerges. Presidential systems favor personalist leadership, while parliamentary systems incentivize political parties. This explains why Latin America has seen numerous populist leaders without party attachments winning executive power, while European populists typically organize as political parties. Leaders are central to populism, with many scholars arguing that reliance on strong leaders who mobilize masses for radical reform is a defining feature. While populism has produced many flamboyant leaders, from Hugo Chavez to Geert Wilders, who present themselves as the voice of the people, there is no single prototypical populist leader. The stereotypical populist leader is often portrayed as a charismatic strongman, particularly in Latin America, where the Caudillo tradition runs deep. These leaders craft an image as men of action rather than words, emphasizing quick decision-making against expert advice. They typically use simple, sometimes vulgar language and a beer table discourse to present themselves as one of the boys. However, this stereotype captures only a minority of populist leaders. Many successful populists don't fit this mold at all. Female populist leaders like Marine Le Pen in France, Pauline Hanson in Australia, and Sarah Palin in the United States use gender to strengthen their outsider credentials in male-dominated political systems. Palin emphasized her opposition to the good old boys network, while Hanson presented herself as not a polished politician, but as a woman who has had her fair share of life's knocks. Perhaps surprisingly, many successful populists come from wealthy business backgrounds. The Shinawatra family in Thailand, Silvio Berlusconi in Italy, and Ross Perot in America were all billionaires before becoming voices of the common people. These entrepreneur populists use their business success to construct their status as political outsiders, presenting themselves as honest, self-made individuals who succeeded despite corrupt politicians, not because of them. Ethnicity also plays complex roles in populist leadership. In Latin American ethnopopulism, leaders like Bolivia's Evo Morales use indigenous identity to prove both separation from the elite and connection to common people. Conversely, Peru's Alberto Fujimori became popular despite being part of a small Japanese minority. His outsider status helped him connect with common people as a fellow non-European Peruvian. What unites these diverse leadership styles is a carefully constructed image as both political outsiders and authentic representatives of common people. Populist leaders excel at creating a perception of being both exceptional enough to lead and ordinary enough to represent the common citizen. The reality often contradicts this image. Most successful populist leaders are very much part of their national elites, highly educated, upper-middle-class individuals with years of political experience. Silvio Berlusconi built his media empire through connections with political elites, while many Eastern European populists had close ties to former communist regimes. As Paul Taggart observed, populism can be understood as politics for ordinary people by extraordinary leaders who construct ordinary profiles. The populist leader's greatest skill may be the ability to appear simultaneously exceptional and ordinary, both the champion of a people and one of them. Is populism a threat to democracy or its savior? This question has sparked intense debate among scholars and political observers. Some view populism as fundamentally dangerous to democratic institutions, while others see it as a necessary corrective to elite dominance. Both perspectives contain truth, because populism has a complex relationship with democracy. Populism is essentially democratic in its core commitment to popular sovereignty and majority rule. Populists consistently advocate for the people's will to determine political outcomes, often supporting direct democratic mechanisms like referendums to bypass what they see as corrupt representative institutions. However, populism conflicts with liberal democracy, today's dominant democratic model that combines majority rule with minority rights and institutional checks on power. Populists reject the notion that anything should constrain the will of the people and often attack independent institutions like courts and media that protect rights against majority overreach. When Hugo Chavez declared that the Constitution must be adapted to the revolution, not the revolution to the Constitution, he expressed this populist prioritization of popular will over institutional constraints. Similarly, Viktor Orban's self-described illiberal democracy in Hungary represents an attempt to maintain electoral legitimacy while dismantling liberal constraints on majority power. Populism's democratic effects vary by context. In authoritarian regimes, populist movements often play positive democraticizing roles by articulating demands for popular sovereignty that question state repression. Poland's Solidarity movement in the 1980s exemplified this dynamic, helping mobilize opposition against communist rule by framing the struggle as the people versus the elite. In established democracies, however, populism can undermine liberal institutions that protect fundamental rights. Hungary under Viktor Orban demonstrates this pattern. After returning to power in 2010, his Fidesz party used its electoral majority to force through a new constitution that removed checks on government power. Several factors influence populism's democratic impact. Political power matters. Populists in opposition typically demand more transparency, while populists in government often work to tilt electoral rules in their favor. The political system type also constrains populists. Presidential systems make it easier for populist outsiders to gain office, but often weave them without legislative support, while parliamentary systems typically force coalition governments that moderate populist influence. The international context provides another constraint. Countries integrated into networks of liberal democracies like the EU face more international backlash when undermining liberal democratic features, though Hungary shows this isn't impossible. Ultimately, populism exposes tensions inherent in liberal democracy's attempt to balance majority rule with minority rights. When liberal democracies fail to deliver what constituencies want, populists exploit this gap by criticizing poor democratic results while advocating for strengthened popular sovereignty at the expense of liberal constraints. Why has populism surged globally in recent decades? Understanding populist success requires examining both demand factors, societal conditions creating receptivity to populist messages, and supply factors, political actors effectively mobilizing these sentiments. On the demand side, several developments have created fertile ground for populism. Long-term social changes have produced more informed, independent citizens who no longer accept elite dominance and are more aware of political wrongdoings. Traditional media has become less controlled by political elites, while social media has created new channels for anti-establishment sentiment to spread. Economic factors play crucial roles in many contexts. The Great Recession triggered populist surges across Europe and North America, while Latin America's neoliberal reforms in the 1990s paved the way for left-wing populists in the 2000s. However, populism also thrives in relatively prosperous countries like Denmark and Switzerland, suggesting economic explanations alone are insufficient. Corruption scandals frequently trigger populist episodes by confirming the populist narrative about corrupt elites. Italy's Clean Hands investigations in the early 1990s decimated the country's political establishment and opened space for Silvio Berlusconi's populist Forza Italia party. On the supply side, successful populists excel at connecting diverse grievances under a unified discourse of us, the good people, versus them, the corrupt elite. They politicize issues ignored by mainstream parties, particularly when those parties converge programmatically. When center-left and center-right parties adopt similar positions on key issues like immigration or economic policy, populists effectively argue they're all the same. Mainstream parties' actions and inactions significantly impact populist success. In Spain, the center-right Popular Party has traditionally addressed issues potential populist right voters care about, Catholicism, law and order, national unity, preventing such parties from gaining traction. Conversely, Austria's Freedom Party thrived when mainstream parties formed coalitions that kept divisive issues off the agenda. Political culture strongly influences populism's emergence. American political culture has always been more populist than Western European traditions, with the notion of we the people central to its founding rhetoric. However, European cultures have become more receptive to populism as social transformations have created emancipated citizens increasingly critical of establishments. Media plays a crucial role in populist success. Some populists benefit from supportive media outlets, Jörg Haider from Die Krone in Austria, UKIP from the Daily Express in Britain, and the Tea Party from Fox News. Some populist leaders are media personalities themselves, like Berlusconi in Italy and Trump in America. The most successful populist movements combine favorable demand conditions with effective supply, charismatic leadership, organizational capacity, and messaging that resonates with specific national contexts. As populist forces establish themselves globally, debates about how to address them have intensified. Many establishment responses have proven ineffective or counterproductive, suggesting the need for more nuanced approaches that address populism's underlying causes rather than merely opposing its symptoms. The most common establishment response involves coordinated opposition to populist actors, what some European countries call a cordon sanitaire strategy of isolating populist parties. However, this approach often backfires by reinforcing populists' narrative of elite conspiracy against the people's will. When mainstream parties form grand coalitions specifically to exclude populists from power, they inadvertently confirm the populist claim of fighting one against all. Another problematic response involves mainstream actors adopting populist rhetoric and policies themselves. This strategy may win short-term electoral advantages, but ultimately legitimizes populist framings and intensifies political polarization. When center-right parties adopt anti-immigration positions to compete with populist radical right parties, they validate the issue's importance while rarely satisfying voters concerned about immigration. More effective responses address the underlying conditions that fuel populist demand. This begins with mainstream politicians being more honest about the limitations of their power in a globalized world. By claiming credit when things go well, but blaming external forces like globalization when things go wrong, establishment politicians set themselves up for accusations of hypocrisy. Being more transparent about constraints would make mainstream parties appear less deceptive. Institutional reforms can also address legitimate concerns about democratic deficits. The European Union's notorious democratic deficit provides populists with an easy target. Reforms that increase transparency and democratic accountability in supranational institutions could reduce populist appeal. Civic education represents another approach, aiming to socialize citizens into liberal democratic values and explain pluralism's importance. However, strong warnings against extremist forces may backfire among those already distrustful of the establishment. Perhaps most importantly, mainstream actors should engage seriously with the legitimate grievances that populists articulate, rather than dismissing populist voters as irrational or bigoted. Populism often succeeds by politicizing real problems that establishments have ignored or downplayed. Immigration, economic inequality, and sovereignty concerns may be exploited by populists, but they represent genuine issues that deserve substantive policy responses. Mudd suggests that populism functions as the bad conscience of liberal democracy, an illiberal democratic response to undemocratic liberalism. Populists question undemocratic aspects of liberal institutions like constitutional courts and international finance organizations that limit elected government's power. While populists offer illiberal answers to these problems, their questions often identify real democratic deficits. The most effective response to populism may be engaging in open dialogue with populist actors and supporters to understand their grievances and develop liberal democratic responses. Since populists often ask the right questions but provide wrong answers, the goal should be not just eliminating populist supply, but weakening populist demand through substantive engagement with the issues populists raise. Populism presents liberal democracy with its most profound internal challenge, a democratic critique of liberal democracy itself. Unlike fascism or communism that reject democracy outright, populism embraces democracy's core principle of popular sovereignty while attacking the liberal constraints that protect pluralism and minority rights. This paradoxical position makes populism particularly difficult to counter. When populists attack independent courts or media as undemocratic, they're not entirely wrong. These institutions do constrain majority will in the name of protecting fundamental rights and constitutional principles. The tension between democratic and liberal elements exists within liberal democracy itself. Recent decades have seen an expansion of unelected bodies with significant power over public policy. Constitutional courts, central banks, regulatory agencies, and international organizations like the IMF and EU have gained authority over domains previously controlled by elected officials. Neoliberal reforms have further constrained national governments through privatization, deregulation, and international treaties that limit policy options. Mainstream politicians have implemented these changes without properly explaining them to citizens, instead presenting them as inevitable necessities imposed by external forces. This approach depoliticizes the contested issues like austerity and immigration to minimize electoral risks. When politicians claim there is no alternative to unpopular policies, they create perfect conditions for populists to offer alternatives, however simplistic. Populism thrives in this environment by promising to restore power to the people against unaccountable elites and institutions. When populists attack the EU's democratic deficit or criticize courts for overturning legislation passed by elected officials, they're exploiting real tensions within liberal democratic systems. The challenge for liberal democracy isn't just to defeat populism, but to reform itself to address these legitimate concerns. This means finding new ways to balance majority rule with minority protection, national sovereignty with international cooperation, and economic efficiency with democratic accountability. Liberal Democrats should avoid both simplistic solutions pandering to the people and elitist discourses dismissing ordinary citizens' competence. They must engage seriously with the democratic deficits that populists identify while defending the liberal principles that populists threaten. Ultimately, populism may serve as a necessary, if uncomfortable, reminder that democracy requires ongoing renewal and reform. By forcing mainstream politicians to justify liberal constraints on majority rule and explain complex policy choices, populism can potentially strengthen liberal democracy if liberal Democrats rise to the challenge rather than merely dismissing populist concerns. The future of liberal democracy may depend on finding this balance, addressing populism's legitimate democratic critiques while preserving the liberal principles that protect pluralism and rights. This means not just opposing populism, but learning from it, recognizing that its appeal stems partly from real democratic deficits that require substantive reform rather than elite dismissal.